Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to WebRush. This is episode 144, and today's topic is Quick with Mishko Hevery, our guest. And with Ward Bell and Craig Shoemaker, I am John Papa, your host for the WebRush podcast, or co-host. Today, hey, Ward, you're wearing something special. I think you need to describe what you're wearing to our audience.
Well, I'm wearing a World War II bomber pilot's cap and glasses for high altitudes. And there's probably a reason for this, because I'm actually flying into the distant past. I was asked by my client to look at a 5,000 line Angular JS controller. figure out why it's doing what it's doing. And I haven't looked at Angular JS in a long time. Fortunately, Mishko is here to answer my questions. It is so weird going back there. There are all these dollar signs and scopes and weird stuff from the and what it reminded me of is, like, if you had learned Spanish and then you went and learned Italian and you lived in Italy for a long time, and then somebody threw something at Spanish at you, you would sort of say, it kind of looks familiar, or sounds familiar, but not really. And I'm plowing through in my prop plane. I'm plowing through Angular JS.
I'm sorry, you had me at 5,000 lines in a controller.
Is that long? Is that what about the other 5,000
lines? It's like two lines over the limit is what it is. It just passed that threshold.
I want to see your ESLint rules, Craig. Craig, you have ESLint rules of 5,000 lines in a file.
Don't judge
file
me.
Width. What's your file width going on?
10,000, I think.
Oh, my. You know, I this reminds me when I worked at a shop once where we had outsourced a project to convert an app. It was being rewritten anyway, and they wanted to convert the front end from, which is all jQuery, to AngularJS. This is about a decade ago. And they did the whole thing in a week. And the people who worked with me were like, we don't know AngularJS or jQuery. Can you look at it and just tell me if this makes sense, like what they did? A week seems really on the low side of time to make sure a production critical app has been converted. I said, sure, I'll take a look. It took me 5 minutes to see what they did. So I had the old app up and the new app up. Everything was the same, except all they did was wrap a controller around every jQuery file that they had. It was fascinating. I'm like, well, they're like, is it work? I'm like, well, it seems to work. I'm like, this is an interesting perspective. I'll leave it up to you. What did you ask them to do?
You know? Oh, man.
Anyway, and that's when Ward was fired. But no, I tease. Hey, you know, it's really, these stories are good for today, because on our show today, we have a guest who intimately is aware of a lot of the things we're making reference to in our preamble. And that guest is Mishko Hevery. How you doing?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's down a memory lane, remembering all these things.
Yeah. You know something a little bit about this thing called AngularJS, don't you?
I deny all knowledge.
So for those of you out there who aren't familiar with Mishko, let's go ahead and give you a little information about what he's been up to. So Mishko Hevery is the CTO at Builder.io, where he's helping to empower anyone to create blazing fast sites. Previously, he's worked at Google, where he created Angular and AngularJS, not in that order. And he was a co-creator of Karma. Before focusing on making the web better, he brought testing culture to Google and the world throughout his blog. Mishko started his career by designing digital circuits and moved to databases, full stack development, and finally front-end frameworks, giving him a unique perspective. And he understands all the layers from the web down to the transistor, and I don't doubt it. Welcome to the show, Mishko, and thank you so much for all you've done for the community and shaping many of our careers and lives through the tools that we use.
Ruining many of our lives.
Does it make you want to cry a little inside when you see things like what I just mentioned or Ward mentioned, Mishko?
I don't usually cry about these things. Like, to me, it's just like, oh, people, they're so interesting.
It's not always perfect, but you know what? We all get the code to work somehow. And as long as it goes to production and solves a business need, I think there's a way to clap for that, you know?
A unique point of view.
I'm trying to give everybody a pass these days in pandemic days, Mishko. We've all got a lot going on. So, but on today's show, we're here to talk about something new and interesting. Interesting to me, at least for sure. And I hope to everybody else, all of our listeners, relatively recently, I believe it was just less than a week ago, I saw that you were tweeting on social media about, it looks like, a new web framework that you're being part of at your new company, Builder.io. So can you tell us about what this web framework is and just kind of give us a baseline of what people should expect?
Yeah, thanks. So I think it's kind of rethinking everything from the bottom up. And specifically, what we want to try to focus on is time to interactive. If you look at, you know, e-commerce websites, you will discover that they're, you know, Google, first of all, has this thing called page speed. And if you look at the e-commerce website, you'll discover that just about most e-commerce websites are in the red. Very, very few are in the yellow. And having a website in the green is essentially a unicorn. It doesn't really exist. And, you know, if you had a couple of, you know, websites that are bad, you could say like, well, this clearly this company just doesn't know what they're doing. But the fact that it's throughout the industry, like everybody's having troubles with this, I'm going to go on a limb and basically say that the set of tools that we have and the way we think about the problem is not optimal for this thing, right? I think what happens is people choose a framework. They love it. It gives them productivity. They produce lots and lots of code. They ship it. And at some point, somebody says, yeah, but it's slow. And at that point, it is just fundamentally too late to kind of figure out what's going on. And what Qwik is Qwik says, no, let's look at the problem from a completely different angle. Let's focus on time to interactive. The time to interactive is kind of our thing that we want to make sure that we hit. And we want to hit it as basically 100 out of 100 on a mobile device, on 3G connection all the time. And the whole secret to it is to basically delay as much of the JavaScript as possible until later. So if you look at existing frameworks, really they all talk about lazy loading, but they don't have any lazy loading primitives, right? There's no core primitive built into the framework that talks about lazy loading. And therefore, these frameworks really think of lazy loading as an afterthought. Qwik is different in the sense that it takes the lazy loading concept in its heart and to an extreme and basically says, how do we delay everything we possibly can? And specifically, the goal is to not download any piece of code that isn't immediately executable, right? Like, so if you download a piece of code, you want to execute all of it. If you are downloading code and not executing it, then you probably bundled things or unnecessarily too big and you could do some work to break it up. So that's kind of the high level pitch.
Hey Ward, you know, I was building an application the other day and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG Grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what. In part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client's security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or is something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com.
So it kind of sounds like one of the main use cases that you're thinking about is the time to interactive, particularly on maybe mobile devices and even slow internet connections. So how is it that you, like, how does it work to be able to defer and delay the code that you need when someone's about to hit an order button or next or whatever?
Yeah. So I think it's important to kind of understand the problem before I describe the solution. So let's go there first. If you look at a normal e-commerce website, the first thing that everybody basically does on e-commerce is they have to do server-side pre-rendering, right? This is a must. Otherwise, we can't get any of the performance numbers. So everybody starts with server-side pre-rendering. The trouble is that you want an interactive site, right? The HTML that showed up from the server is just static HTML, and you want to have an interactive site. So you have to run, you basically have to attach the listeners to the DOM. And the framework needs to execute some code in order to attach the listeners. The problem is the framework doesn't know where the listeners are. And so the framework has to download all of the templates and execute them. But the framework can't execute the templates because it requires that you have data to feed into the template, right? The template is not a kind of a thing in the void. Like, template takes data and produces your DOM eventually. And so all you want to know is where the listeners are, and you kind of walk backwards and you're like, oh yeah, but I need to get the templates. And in order to get the templates, I need to get the model and the state and your whatever state management system. And in order to get that, I need these other pieces because, you know, there's closures everywhere and the imports and nothing's lazy loaded. And so next thing you know, all of your basically landing page has to get downloaded into the client and executed. And this download and execute is the fundamental source of the long time to interactive. The other source of bad time to interactive is all the analytics people install, and it's a whole separate show that we should talk about later. But if you think about it, like, all existing frameworks have this property, which I call replayable property, which is that when they get to the client, they have to replay everything the server did just so they can figure out where the listeners are, right? And that is why it's systemic. This is why all of the industry has an issue, because no matter which framework they choose, the frameworks they're choosing all have replayability as their fundamental property, which means the boot up time is proportional to the complexity of the code on their landing homepage. Right?
So Mishko, let me just sort of see. I think I understand what you're saying, but let's sort of paint a picture for people a little bit. So let's sort of take an example, and you have a nice one. You have a to-do app, which could represent a shopping cart, right, with my previous item selected and a button on it to say go pay for it. Mm-hmm. So if I understand rightly, when it's normal things, what happens is it static renders all that, puts my items that were in the shopping cart, paints a button, but nothing can be clicked or touched. I can just look at it. So what frameworks do is say, I don't know, I wouldn't know what it would happen if you clicked. I don't know really what's on the page. So I have to, behind the scenes, redraw everything with that my framework produced, including all the data items in my shopping cart, redraw the button, reattach the what happens when you click it, and do that such that the user never sees I did it. And then when I click, ta-da. What you're saying is, no. With Quick, what we're going to do is we may paint the screen with all this stuff for you, but we're not going to have to repaint anything. I'm guessing, right? And that's what you mean by replayable. I don't have to repaint everything. I don't have to behind the scenes, swap it all out before you can see it. I'm just going to do something so that when you click that button or link or whatever, magically the code for it will be there. Is that approximately how I would experience it?
No, you're right on the money, right? Like, you essentially described what the problem is and why everybody's having a hard time with this particular problem, right? Because the set of tools we have, all these different frameworks, and it doesn't matter which one you choose, they all have this property of replayability, which you beautifully described. So now we can talk about the solution, right?
Right. Oh, and by the way, the data also, right? Because they have to usually you have to sort of mine the downloaded HTML to find the data that populated that list of shopping
carts
too. So when I think about, because I've seen, I mean, a lot of us have seen all of these frameworks that do this server-side rendering thing, and how to get a hold of that data was also one of the problems that we would face. So I'm sorry, I just wanted to set it up with a concrete example so our listeners can visualize it.
Yeah,
in
no, thank you.
Language.
I appreciate it. I think it was a good thing. So all frameworks have this replayability property, and so what I'm saying is that what you want to have actually is a framework that I call is resumable, which means it can just leave, continue where the server left off, right? And the first difference is that you have to somehow annotate where the listeners are in a form that's serializable into HTML, right? So HTML is already our serialization technology that we have, right? We take DOM and we serialize everything to HTML. And so a natural thing to do is to just say like, hey, how can I serialize all of the listeners into the HTML in a text form, right? Because HTML has to be text. And server does this. And by serializing all of these things into the DOM, you don't have to go and replay the whole world in order to figure out where the listeners are. Instead, you just have little text markers that basically say like, you know, this thing has a click listener and this thing has a mouse move listener or a scroll listener or so on and so forth, right? And you can describe how the whole application, where all the listeners are without having to download any piece of code or execute any piece of code. So we have this thing called a quick loader, which executes at the very, very beginning. And the quick loader is super tiny. We're talking about less than a kilobyte, right? That's like unheard of tiny. And it executes in about 1 millisecond. And all the quick loader does is it sets up a global listener on the document and says, I'm interested in the click, mouse move, key up, or whatever that your application cares about, right? And it sets up global listeners. And then it's only when you actually click on something, let's say a button, right? The quick loader then goes and tries to figure out, okay, where is the annotation in the DOM? Where's the special attribute that basically says, if you click on me, go download this piece of code and execute it. And so when you click on something, it's only then that we go and fetch the code for that thing. Now, this is a first order approximation of the problem. There are secondary problems that come into be, which is like, well, great, now I clicked on something. How do I make sure that I just don't have to download the whole application and re-execute the whole application? Because that just kind of shifts the problem, doesn't actually solve it, right? And that's kind of a more in-depth discussion we can have later. But the fundamental idea is that you just want to delay everything, right? You just don't want to execute any piece of code.
And if I click the button, let's say, and you analyze it, you looked at the annotation and it says, I got to go get that code because it's not here. I'm going to go get it back from the server. Is it going to be just small enough to be the click listener? Is it going to be bigger? Is it, you know, and how, and as a developer, how would I make decisions about that?
Yeah. So a lot of things to unpack over there. the short answer is that the goal of the framework is to make sure that it's as small as possible, right? Because we have this philosophy that if you're going to download code, then 100% of that code needs to be executed. And if you don't execute 100% of that code, then you really are downloading dead code that you didn't need at this point, right? So if it's a listener, and let's say you are in like an Amazon website where you are looking at, you're trying to buy a hammer, right? And you hover over the hammer and you get this like detailed image that pops up, right? You should only have to download the image, or you should only have to download the code that is associated with the detailed view of the hammer. You shouldn't have to download like the shopping cart or any of these other pieces, right? So Quick makes sure of that as well. Now, it's a more in-depth discussion I think we can have about this particular topic that might be out of scope for kind of the introduction, but we make sure of that as well. The other thing we make sure of is that you can actually place header messages to the browser and basically say, I think the most likely thing that the user is going to do is probably hover over the image or, you know, some specific order, and the browser can start preloading the code, but notice it's preloading, not executing the JavaScript, right? So essentially you're populating the browser's cache, but you're not actually paying the execution. In other words, you're not negatively impacting the TTI, time to interactive. And so there's many tricks you can do.
Yeah, that gets at one of the questions, because in the comments on your introductory page, which everybody should go read, one of the comments was, well, you know, on mobile, every request you make is very expensive. So if you were doing lots of little pieces, there would be a huge lag as the JavaScript you would need would eventually build up, whereas you pretty much know a lot of the things that will happen. So is that how you kind of address that problem?
Yes.
Of having enough there so that once they start interacting, it's lively?
That's one way. There's another way of looking at this particular problem, which is that if you have a standard framework, there is basically a main. There's kind of a bootstrap main entry point to your framework, right? And it doesn't matter how you interact with the page. Everybody gets the same main. Everybody gets the same entry point to the framework. And because everybody gets the same entry point, it's the same set of bundles in the same order and so on and so on. So we're well familiar with that kind of a paradigm, right? Quick is different in the sense that every single click listener is essentially a different entry point to the system, right? Because if I click on button A, then I'm essentially executing a different code base than if I click on button B. And so what you do is you take something like a rollup and you collect all of the possible entry points into your system and you say, hey, rollup, these are the entry points. This is all the code. You do your magic, right? And rollup is good at kind of pulling things together and clumping it together and says, well, I think this is a subsection of things that are useful to kind of download together and so on and so forth. That's one way you can do it. The other thing is what Quick tries to do is to give you the absolute ability to break the application down into smallest possible pieces, right? Because I feel like if the framework doesn't give you the ability, then you won't be able to do it. Now, it doesn't mean that you should actually go and break your application up into tiny little pieces, right? It just means that the framework can do it. And so there is a level of kind of a, you know, trade-off that one has to do, saying like, you know, how fine-grained do I want to break this up versus how much it actually is so that you can get the right kind of performance. But between preloading and the fact that the code is small and the fact that we can download as little as possible, you can get a really nice experience for the user.
From the developer experience perspective, like the mental model that you need to adopt in order to build an application like this, how much are you thinking about, I need to organize my app this way in order for Quick to work the way it should? Or is it just like, you know, once you sort of set things up and get going in the right direction, it handles all that for you?
Yeah, I just code the way I've always coded and it magically, right, Mishko? It knows what I want. Right? I just write my shitty 5,000 line controller and you figure it out, right?
So wait, is this using GitHub Copilot?
Where, that's what, you know, I was just thinking.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, so there is a slight difference to a mental model. At the high level, the mental model is still the same, right? You have controllers, you have components, you have listeners, you have templates. Like, nothing really changes from that point of view. On the low level, though, you do have to change your behavior slightly, right? You can't somehow, you know, take one big function and put lots of small sub-functions and closures into it and somehow magically assume that the tooling will pull this apart and do something useful with it, right? So from that point, what Quick is kind of expecting you to do is break your code base into lots of small files. And basically each of these small files becomes an entry point into your application. But once you do the job of breaking your application into small files so that you have these entry points, the coding after that is very natural. And it's typically what you would expect from any framework, right? You create your components, you create your templates, you put your listeners on the templates. It's a straightforward process.
Does the tooling, or will the tooling with this separate these files out for you, or do I have to figure out how to separate those files out?
So currently we are in the state where we force you to separate the files out in this particular way. We are having discussions with Adam Bradley about, you know, how could we provide ways to do this automatically. There is a balance between, you know, magic and, you know, what's actually happening behind the scenes. And so we're trying to kind of strike a balance that is, it's straightforward. You understand what's going on. There's not too magic, but at the same time, you know, like, don't do everything. So this is still one of those areas we're trying to figure out. But the way it is right now is, hey, this is what you need to do. At the end of the day, these are the files that the framework needs to work. Whether or not we can figure out how to streamline this is to be seen.
So just so we could kind of picture it in our mind's eye, like maybe you pick like the to-do app or something like that. Can you just at a high level talk about like you would create this code file and that code file? And
now we're getting into the weeds. I love it. Okay. So before I answer that question, I think it's important to kind of look at how most frameworks do rendering, because that will kind of lead the discussion about where Qwik is different. So most frameworks have this idea of some kind of a render function, right? Something you tell the framework to say, hey, go render. And what you give to the framework in order to render are two pieces of data, right? You give it a template and you give it a data, meaning that take the data, take the template, mush it together, that will produce the essentially the output, and then reflect the output inside of the DOM. And in all the frameworks, as far as I know, this process is fully synchronous. And that is kind of the problem, because it's fully synchronous, you are not able to insert points of lazy loading, points of asynchronicity, right? And therefore, you can't lazy load or do anything of that sort. And because you can't do any of these lazy loading tricks, the result is that when you grab the root component, through the imports, you're essentially grabbing the whole app, right? If you tell rollup, give me the root component, the rollup is going to give you the root component and everything else, because there is no other way to do this. And so the first thing you have to do is say, well, how can I have a rendering system that isn't synchronous, that is asynchronous, and a rendering system that actually understands asynchronicity? So the Qwik's rendering system is fully async in a sense that you can call render and it returns you back a promise that tells you like when things are done. Okay, that's kind of the big difference. The next big difference is that let's say you have the main of the application, the main component, the one that is the app component on the very top, right? You will say, oh, import header, import footer, import body, right? Or something like that for your application. And then you include those components inside of your template. Well, if you import a header or a footer, you kind of broke lazy loading, right? You prevented the system from ever deciding that actually the header is something that never, ever will change on the client. And therefore, there's no need to ever download a header into the client, right? But you can't do it now because you put an import statement up there. So one of the things Qwik has is this idea of a facade. And what it essentially does, if you think about it, is it takes the import statement from the top level of the file where it's an import and moves it into something we call the QRO, basically a glorified string inside of a facade that basically says like, here is a component, which is the header, but I'm not providing you anything that goes with it. All you really have is an empty shell. But I do have an attribute over here for you that says, if you decide that you actually do need to descend into this particular component, this is the URL where you can get kind of the insides of this component. And by creating these facades, the rendering system can selectively decide which particular components need to be rendered and which not. So what we talk about in Qwik is this idea of out-of-order component rehydration. Right? Component rehydration being like, hey, you sent me a whole bunch of HTML from the server. I now need to execute some behavior on it. So I need to rehydrate the component. Like most frameworks have this particular concept. The problem is most frameworks are like, oh yeah, you're going to have to rehydrate the root component and all of them together as a single unit, right? Qwik does it, says, no, you can do it out of order, meaning that you can take a component that is somewhere in the middle of the hierarchy of components and the tree of components and rehydrate just that component without being forced to rehydrate your parent or your children, right? And so this gives you great power because if you look at an e-commerce website, huge parts of it will never change, even though a lot of it is, right? So the things that would change would be like menu, your shopping cart, your details, your comments, and things of that sort. But a lot of stuff around the page just won't never, ever change. And so why are you forcing me to download and keep re-rendering these components that are essentially never, ever going to change? And we know this, right? A lot of other parts of the websites will change, but only if you go like to a settings or like preferences pane or like something of that sort. Again, like, why are you making me download this code where 99% of the people will never, ever go there? And this is what Quick kind of takes into an extreme. It says, like, how do we make the whole thing as lazy as possible? Like, we have this basic philosophy is, if we don't need to change it, then we don't need its code. Like, don't go and download any of this stuff, right? So this is what we mean by the out-of-order code execution or out-of-order rehydration of components. Now, there's another interesting bit of this in order to make this whole thing work, which is that you need to store, every framework needs to store state, right? And all existing frameworks store the state inside of JavaScript heap, basically inside of memory of your browser, right? But the memory isn't serializable to HTML, like, because there is, it's, first of all, it's not a direct acyclic graph. Then there's a lot of weird things in there that like can't be done, like closures and objects and so on. You know, there's a tiny subset of things that you can actually serialize, and JavaScript heap just isn't one of them. And so what Quick does is kind of flips the whole thing on its head and says, no, we will keep zero state inside a JavaScript heap. We will keep all of our state in the DOM in form of attributes, which means that they're in the form of strings.
Michio, if I could interrupt you for a sec. So I understand what you're saying about heap and why is it important? Can you elaborate on why it's important that it, I assume you're saying that it has to be serializable?
Because we want to have the reasonability property, right? We want to have the application run on the server and freeze dry it and then turn it into HTML. And that HTML needs to contain everything it needs to know in order to resume the behavior. In other words, the framework itself is completely stateless. It has complete amnesia about what it did, you know, a second ago, and it has no idea what it's going to do next. All the information that it needs is actually in the DOM, whether it's listeners, whether it's subscriptions to data store or information about which data will change which component, or whether it is information about which components boundaries exist or what to download. All of that information is non-existent in the JavaScript heap. All of that information is in the HTML or in the DOM itself. And that creates a wonderful property that the framework can just continue execution where it left off. So let me give you an example.
I'm gonna, hold on a second. Because HTML and DOM are not the same, and the DOM is not serializable either. So help me get over that one.
Yes. So they are same from the point of view of attributes. If you just work with DOM and you store all of your information in the attributes, which means it's a key, which is a string, and it's a value, which is a string, right? If you do that, then it is serializable, right? Then you can take DOM and you can just say .inner.html and you will get a piece of HTML that you can send to the client. And when the Quick wakes up on the client, it won't even know that it wasn't the code that it produced, right? So things like, for example, even things like marking a component dirty that it needs to be re-rendered, even that information is stored inside of the DOM. Even the information about like who needs to be rendered in which order, like all of that is in the DOM. And the interesting property that emerges out of this is that certain things that become essentially impossible to do with the classical frameworks become so trivial and Quick, it's almost weird. So let me give you an example. One of the hardest things that the frameworks are trying to do is to have this thing of like, oh, something is off the viewport and therefore why bother rendering it because it's off the viewport, right? Super hard problem. And as far as I know, nobody has solved it, right? But with Quick, because everything's in a DOM, things become super trivial. So imagine you have a page that like scrolls forever. We all visited websites, right? They have like super long scrolling, right? What if you only sent the first, you know, top that's actually viewport visible of HTML to the client? And then when you start scrolling, you will send a request to the server and says, okay, give me the rest of it. and the rest of it shows up, and all you have to do is inner HTML it to the end, right? And as far as the framework is concerned, it doesn't care. Like, sure, you just inner HTML'd more stuff in there. With it came listeners, information about who is supposed to update what the state management is. All that information is in there. And so if you happen to interact with the page, then the Qwik will do its correct behavior. But if you never interact with that page, the Qwik doesn't even know about it. And so you can actually modify the site you're on. You can inner HTML all kinds of other parts of the page that, and you can do it lazily. You can figure out like, oh, it's in the viewport or it's not in the viewport, or like it went off the viewport, so I'm going to delete it because I don't need it, or cache it, or who knows what. Like all of these things just naturally work, and all of it just come down to like you're just modifying the HTML, or rather the DOM, right? Because it's in the browser. And the Qwik will just do the right thing when you interact with it.
Hey, John, I have this great idea for a mobile app. I want to use native features like the camera, photo gallery, and geolocation, but I just don't have the time to learn a new language like Swift.
Yeah, but you do know JavaScript and web tech like React, Angular, and Vue, right?
I do, but how does that help me?
Well, if you use the Ionic framework, you can use your JavaScript skills and you get fully styled iOS and Android mobile components. Plus, it uses Capacitor to talk to all the native device platforms.
So if I use Ionic and Capacitor, I don't have to learn a new language. My JavaScript skills give me what I need to build a cross-platform app.
Absolutely. And you can check it out at ionic.link/webrush.
I'll do it.
Mishka, you got a lot of people making faces that the listeners can't see right now because the video doesn't get broadcast. And I'm watching Craig and Ward's faces as you're talking. So I want to hear their questions because I know it's coming.
I'm going to say a bad word here. Some of this reminds me a little bit of ASP.NET view state. And I know that's not at all what it is. But I'm curious, when we get to a point that you have a view that has a lot on it, and all of that data is serialized into the DOM, I would imagine the way around that is, like you're saying, the lazy loading. But you know, let's just say we've all seen those apps that have a million things on them. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. So you have to take, we basically have components, right? The visual components that you have on a page. And then we have entities, which is essentially like service thing, it basically a way to store data. And all of these things you can break down in essentially two parts. One is the part that you have to serialize, that's serializable, right? And the stuff we call transient, which is the stuff that you can throw away and recompute if you need to. And so what happens is all of the stuff that's serializable, we attach to the DOM and we attach it to the right location. So obviously the component data will be attached to the component element and nothing else, and so on and so forth. But the data that's shared across the page, like essentially what we call entities, will be serialized somewhere closer to the top so that everybody can see the data. And because of that, we can keep it focused, right? And basically say like, no, the data isn't one humongous glob that you put on the root. Instead, the data is distributed and it lives together with where it's supposed to be needed. And if that particular chunk of HTML or DOM isn't needed or is not serialized or hasn't been downloaded yet, then also the data hasn't been downloaded with it either. So it's a slightly different way of thinking about this problem. And it is a responsibility that has to go to the developers. So developers can't just mix and match like, oh, let me just add a closure and this into the data state and then magically this thing gets serialized, right? They have to separate this out and say, okay, this is the data that I absolutely must preserve if I go from server to the client or something like that. And this is the data that I can recompute in case, I get rehydrated and I have essentially amnesia and I have to re-remember all the pieces.
So to pick up on what Craig was saying there, if I had because this is, typical a grid with, 1,000 line items on it. The page is going to, the HTML coming down the wire is going to get ridiculously large. I don't want to do that, particularly since you can only see the first 30 of them above the fold or something like that. So essentially, what if I have this real, am I doing you justice here, Craig? Nod your head if I am. I got my worry is that I got this gigantic page. Now, in the case he was talking about, typically the entire, the data would have been in this big single massive chunk hidden at the top, and then all the HTML would have fallen behind it. But the problem he's setting up is, I got a page that's too big. What do I do? Is that right, Craig? Is that fair?
Yeah, I know obviously there's a well-architected answer for my question, but I was just, you know, I'm thinking about business apps that I've been a part of and seen where there's a million UI elements on the page and there's so many things going on. And so as state is serialized behind each one of those, I was just wondering, like, how does it
get a gigantic page? You get a gigantic page coming over the wire.
Yes. So I think that the fact that the data is attached to where it's actually used is what allows you to lazily keep adding more things as you're scrolling and not really end up with a situation where the first thing you'd render has to download a huge chunk of data. But it does require that the developer thinks about these things ahead of time. And I guess my point is that current set of frameworks don't have a mechanism or have a best practice on how to do this. And as a result, developers get themselves into trouble. And by the time they figure out they're in trouble, there's no good way out of this mess. And so the big difference here is that Quick is giving you the tools. Now it's up to you to kind of use those tools in the correct way, but at least it's giving you the tools, giving you the ability, sets the guidelines for you and says, please do it this way so that later on you won't be surprised.
So I had the flip of what my face was sort of making. I was making ugly faces because I had kind of the flip side of what he was talking about. Because as you were describing, as the user scrolls or does things, I was thinking, so that's nice little small bits, but isn't it going to be janky? Because I have to make all these server trips, as you keep lazy loading. I guess that goes back to one of the original questions, but you got to be thinking about a janky experience.
Yeah, so prefetching is kind of the answer to that, right?
And that's the answer to that.
You need to think about it as well, and you need to have a framework that understands all of these things. And again, I'm going to come back that the existing set of frameworks simply glance over this. They have nothing in the core that talks about it, and they just assume that you will somehow end up with the right situation later, right? So it is really an afterthought for all of the existing frameworks on how to deal with this problem. And the result is what it is, which is that nobody can get fast enough websites.
I'm going to be the guy in the room who asks the uncomfortable question of, if none of the other frameworks have thought of this, and you thought of this here, and you created one of those other frameworks, when did this idea, obviously it didn't exist when you created Angular. So I'm just teeing you up for, when did this kind of come to you? Was it a convergence of new features on the web? Kind of where did this come from for you?
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of a lot of different things. So first, Google internally has a framework that is similar to this, has a similar idea of delaying things as much as possible. So part of it is from there. Part of it was, I gave a talk on ng-conf like 3 years ago, kind of explaining some of these ideas. And I laughed that, people are always afraid that somebody will steal your ideas. And here I am convincing people to steal the idea. So it's been in years in the making, and specifically, I just been thinking about how do we make this? How do we really take advantage of what browser has to offer? Right, browser has this amazing ability of lazy loading, lazy binding, delayed binding, and none of the existing frameworks really take care of it. We build apps as if they are desktop apps, as if we don't have to worry about lazy loading, as if all the code is available. And then we're surprised when we get out of it.
It's funny because for years, I'm going back to the Wayback Machine, and I've been doing some reflecting this last week. I gave a keynote earlier in the week on static web apps, and part of my talk included things like RequireJS, Queue, Knockout, Marionette, Backbone, and even precursors to all this before with the browser wars. And something I'm thinking about is during the browser war times, when you couldn't write the same line of code that worked across browsers or versions of the same browser, we were constantly pushing what the browser could do. And a statement you just said completely flips that on its end. And I think we've changed the state we're in is you're saying that the browsers are amazing today. The things they can do really blow us our minds. And yet the tools we're writing aren't taking full advantage of them. Would you agree that, just my limited perception on this is it used to be we're pushing the browsers so hard. It's like taking, a lawnmower engine and trying to go 60 miles an hour in a go-kart 20 years ago. And now it's like we're driving a Tesla or a Ferrari, but we're only going 10 miles an hour.
Yeah. So I've been reflecting on something very, very similar. And my kind of observation is that if you go back like 10 years ago, right, there were a gazillion different languages because we had this philosophy of like, oh, building apps is hard because JavaScript sucks. If we only had a better JavaScript, we would be awesome, right? And there was a gazillion of them, and they all failed. And in the end, we just learned to love JavaScript, right? And now we're in kind of the phase two where we have lots of frameworks, and they all say, dumb sucks. We're going to protect you from it, and you don't have to touch it. And yeah, and we know what the results are. And so I think the next kind of phase is for us to, just like we learn to love JavaScript, I think the next phase is for us to just learn to love browser for what it is and stop abstracting away certain things, because those things that we're abstracting away are actually useful things that we could take advantage of.
So it's time for us to start wrapping up, and I see about 30 more questions from Ward. But we do have to run out of time. And at this point, we like to thank you, Mishka, for coming on. And I want to invite you back on to talk a bit more about Quick. Maybe after there's some of your blog posts show a little bit more demo on the internet, we can bring you back and we can have maybe Craig and Ward and I and Dan can join us to ask some more detailed questions.
I would love to.
But we like to end this part of the show with a final thought for our audience. And Ward, since you've got something on your mind, I know you must have a final thought for our audience on this topic.
Well, it was actually a final question, but it was a higher level question. So I'm going to ask it anyway, and you can use the time that way. I wanted to kind of know what the roadmap for Quick is.
Ah, excellent question. I think it's going to be different. You know, I think Angular, in a way, got built, you know, kind of like an ivory tower. Like, we had a vision of what Angular could be, and we just started building features, and we had this idea that if you build it, they will come. In that sense, Quick is very, very different. Builder.io is a headless visual CMS system, and we have a set of customers that are running on top of e-commerce, right? And those set of customers want fast websites. And so Quick is getting built for those customers to solve their problems, and they are the primary driver of the features, et cetera, that will go into the Quick. It is done in the open source so that the world can benefit from it, because, you know, I just like open source, and I think it's the right thing to do. But it isn't going to be done like, you know, build it and they will come kind of a philosophy. It is very much going to be driven by the business needs for Builder.io and what it needs first.
Welcome to the real world of applications then, Mishka. I remember many years ago, you said to me almost proudly, you know, I've never actually built an application or something like that. You said something, I mean, it wasn't really true, but you said, I just built these frameworks. And, you know, then I let them tell me whether they like it or not. So it really is something different to be driven by a use case, a real live business use case. And that should be a wonderful experience for you.
Thank you.
That's really good to hear. And it's good to hear about the roadmap too. And Craig, I want to shift to you for your final thought for our audience.
Oh, I'm going to follow suit with Warden and ask a question to say that, you know, this is obviously compelling and really exciting. If people want to dive in and get started, is a place for them to do that right now? Or
yes,
we have to wait as more? Okay.
There is a GitHub, you know, GitHub builder.io/quick. Obviously, you can find Twitter, Quick Dev is the Twitter handle. On our GitHub, you can find links to StackBlitz, where you can actually try this out. Kudos to StackBlitz for figuring out how to put Node into your browser. I still can't wrap my head around that. Because Quick is server-side rendered, like the demo needs to include a server. So the Quick demo is there, available on StackBlitz. And we also have a Discord channel where you can jump in and join the chat.
Awesome. We'll include links to all those things out there. And Mishko, I'd like to give you a final thought for audience as well.
I feel like I've been talking so much, I don't even have a final thought. I think Quick is a very different way of looking at the problem. And what I'm trying to kind of paint is, it is not yet another framework. Like, I think it's totally possible to build the classical set of frameworks and build a framework that's incrementally better. But like, the incrementally better would not be sufficiently better to justify kind of the migration or anything to it. I think the only kind of framework you can build at this point is something that is fundamentally different way of thinking about the problem. And that is both a good thing and a bad thing. It is a bad thing because it's going to be, you know, it's not a push button migration story, right? And people will have to adopt it over time. It is a kind of a good thing because it will shake up the way people think about the problems and say, hey, you know, we've been always thinking about it this way. Like, is it still the valid way of thinking about it? And I can imagine that a lot of people will, it will take some convincing or it will take some surprises before they really understand the kind of the fundamentally different approach that this thing is taking and the benefits that those approaches kind of open up.
Well, Misha, I think it's great that you joined us today on this, and I think we're all pretty excited about what's coming on. I appreciate you joining us just a couple of days after you publicly announced this. So this will air in a couple of weeks. So by the time folks you hear this, it'll be several more blog posts out. We've included pretty much every link that Mishka's referenced in our show notes. Hopefully we'll catch them all. Definitely catch up on this stuff and keep up with what's happening. It's pretty impressive to me to see the web evolving. I'm always looking to see where it's heading. And I would agree that as much as I love different things about Angular, Vue, React, Svelte, they're all very similar. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Word you've seen recently in the last 2 years, I've been building the same app in all four to just see what those similarities were and what the differences were. And they do each have some very unique differences as well, of course. But they're all following a very similar model, as you said, Mishko. So I don't know how it's like to build with Qwik yet, but I am just sitting here itching and scratching to see what it's like. So I look forward to seeing that from you, and I won't deter our final thoughts away from the topic today. Hey, thank you again for coming on, and for all of you co-hosts for joining us, and for all of our listeners for coming on for yet another episode of our podcast. It's to all of you what we thank for being on air, and of course to our great sponsors, folks such as Narwhal and Ionic and IdeaBlade, Ward Bell's company. Also to our editor, Lemon Productions. So if you ever need any podcast editing, definitely take a listen with them. And to AG Grid for being our longest time sponsor. Thank you so much for your support. And we look forward to hearing from you on feedback for the podcast, what you want to hear. And you'll hear from us every Thursday morning. See you next time.